You're listening to Giro Vagando by the Cycling Podcast. Today we are on the Passo del Borbone.
Cozze, cittadine, cozze, cozze, piscine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze, cittadine, cozze, cozze, piscine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Oh, it's really beautiful scenery. Who doesn't love Dolomites? It's a beautiful winter, summer, all seasons. It's really beautiful here, and I'm really enjoying. I hope today stays the weather like this, and we can also see some this of iconic mountains.
Brian, buonasera.
Buonasera.
Cin-cin. Sardinian beer. Both got Sardinian beer and Ichnusa. That's lovely church bells there. In a location that couldn't be less like Sardinia, could it? Brian, if you can see beyond your nose, describe the scene.
That's never been an easy thing for me, but yeah, we're looking out on a stunning ridge, Dolomite Ridge, three rows of mountains, and the fog is sort of clearing between the middle ones. But we're in Seren del Grappa, and Seren it certainly is. It's serene. Eerily serene.
Apart from the swearing, the heavily accented Venetian swearing from the bar inside just to our left.
I said to you before we started recording, I think the average age here is 60 plus.
It's a very sleepy town. We're in the Veneto. How many times is that going to ring? Is it a 24-hour clock? I don't know whether the listeners can hear that, but that's the church bell ringing in Seren del Grappa. It's 7:30, so...
No sleep for Brooklyn.
You talked about the beautiful view of the Dolomites. Tadej Pogacar, we heard from first, our race leader, of course, in the Giro d'Italia. He was waxing poetic about the Dolomites today. What a beautiful route it proved to be. Fortunately, we saw some of the Dolomites today. We also saw the Dolomites when we woke up this morning. We were staying in Selva di Valgardena. But Brian, we here are pretty much sort of under the brow of Monte Grappa, which does not belong to the Dolomites. And of course, the race will be here for its kind of grand finale on Saturday. It's grand mountain finale.
Double ascent.
Yes, Brian. And it's a mountain very well known as well for having played host to some really brutal battles in the First World War. This was a kind of Austrian-Italian front was kind of up there.
Here's an entirely pink Tesla.
Oh my God, it is as well. Castelli Tesla. It seems to be the main attraction in this town. Oh, salve, buonasera.
Quasi.
No, sentito. Per? Cycling podcast si chiama.
Va bene. Allora.
Sì, sì. Quella di Pogacar. Sì, sì.
Infatti. Ciao.
Well, Brian, I was trying to talk about the monument to the events of World War One and all of the people who lost their lives in World War One, but we were interrupted by that pink Tesla and the Tadej Pogacar look-alike bike on the back. Grazie.
Grazie.
All sorts going on here. My jacket's just fallen down. One of the locals has rushed outside to restore it to its owner.
Buonasera.
Buonasera.
Ciao.
Arrivederci.
Ciao, ciao.
Vuole intervenire?
Domani.
Sì, dopo domani. All
ciao.
Sorts going
ciao.
On here.
You found the most happening place in town.
Yeah. Certainly the messiest start to the podcast of this Giro d'Italia so far. A messy start to the podcast. I wouldn't say a messy stage, but a kind of chaotic stage for certainly in the first hour or two. We expected it to be thus. Everyone is scrambling for crumbs. The few crumbs that Tadej Pogacar has left on this Giro d'Italia.
Centered at the start, really. We're not at the Processo yet.
We're not
at
the official Processo.
But there were riders, probably on the rollers, but also riders coming up and down the road before rolling out. A lot of nervous faces.
A lot of stressed riders this morning, particularly in those first couple of hours. You know, the teams who have so far nothing to show for this Giro d'Italia were very, very keen to make amends. But Brian, we'll get to that now, shall we?
Il processo alla tappa, the post-stage inquisition.
Where did we start this morning? Where did we start this morning?
We started in Selva di Valgardena and we finished all the way up, first for me, probably for you as well, at the Passo Broccone, 159 kilometers.
Brian, I didn't notice this morning. I think I recognized. So you remember our 1998 our podcast about 1998 Giro d'Italia, Love and Other Drugs, about Marco Pantani winning the 1998 Giro d'Italia, I recognised the spot where the finish line in Selva di Val Gardena was in 1998 and where Pantani took the pink jersey for the first time. Were there any breakaways today?
Yes, there was. What I would like to call the original breakaway, and that went more straight from the start. And would you believe it? There was a photo finish for the mountain points on the first climb where Pellizzari won ahead of Nairo Quintana.
Well, Pellizzotti, as one of our colleagues called him this morning in an interview with Tadej Pogacar, asked him whether he was going to let Pellizzotti win next time. Because Franco Pellizzotti hasn't laced up a racing shoe in anger for about 10 years. Anyway, sorry, Brian.
Yeah, so a group of 10 riders went away. A rather strong group, you could say. Davide Ballerini, Georg Steinhauser, Nairo Quintana, Gerbezibir, Giulio Pellizzari, yeah, thank you.
It's tough. Onward. It's tough.
Nicola Conci, Marco Frigo, Damiano Caruso, and Walter Attila. They never really got a huge gap. Interestingly enough, DSM were doing
DSM Firmenich,
the brunt of the work. So they actually got caught. Actually, at a point where there was only some 30 riders in the front group, I think. Then Hirt and Alaphilippe went and got caught. But just after the big group got caught, Tobias Steinhauser went away. Initially, he got Emanuel Gebesegui with him. So that was 34 kilometers from the finish, so halfway up the first climb of the Brocon.
A very beautiful Passo Brocon.
Stunning, like chlorophyll festival, so yeah. Green it was.
Yeah.
Steinhauser had a 45-second gap to Gebesegui and so around 2.5 minutes to the peloton. And then all kinds of stuff started to happen in the pink jersey group. Danny Martinez started to move. The gap for Steinhauser started to dwindle a little bit. Geraint Thomas was up there. O'Connor was a little bit in trouble. You could feel that Pogacar maybe or maybe not was sitting with his finger on the pink trigger, trying to, should I not? And when he finally went, and it's the usual manuscript, he puts out Maika in front, you know, to pull full steam ahead, and then once he peels off, he goes. So Pogacar went with 2.1 kilometers. It was actually first Dani Martinez, first actually Bardet, then Dani Martinez, and then when Pogacar went alone, it was with 2.1 kilometers to go. At that point, Steinhauser had 2 minutes. So we sort of knew it would be close, but still, two minutes for 2.1 kilometers is just a question of whether Steinhauser had calculated right, and please bear in mind he was in the original breakaway, so it's quite impressive. Steinhauser did win his first ever pro victory. Then Pogacar was a minute and 24 after. A few riders in the favorites group didn't have the best of days, but then again, compared to Pogacar, no one really does once we go into the mountains. So Pogacar finished second. Antonio Tiberi, who was on a good day today and pulling and looked quite authoritative in the work he did, but he was still some 20 seconds slower than Pogacar. Geraint Thomas in that group, Dani Martinez, who was early quite active. Ana Rubio looked quite good today. He was in that group again. And Bardet, I think, was quite impressive.
Yeah, had his best day of the day.
Very, very active today.
Legs-wise.
And then the slightly off the boil today, Timon Arensman. Interestingly enough, Rafał Majka was 10th today. Mm. The point of discussion, but we'll get to that once we had a look at the GC, will be sort of could or could he not have won today, Tadej Pogacar. He certainly didn't. And it was a huge breakthrough win for Tobias Steinhauser and Georg. That was his dad. Yeah. Just to go shows how time flies.
Or Georg, as the Italians were calling him. Georg,
yeah,
Steinhauser.
I mean, he was roaming around the area of Lucca when I first moved there. I remember the goes to show, I mean, how long time ago that was. Anyways, the GC as it stands, Daniel, I'm just basically not letting you ask any questions here. Pogacar now leads with 7:42 to Dani Martinez. Still only around 20 seconds between Martinez and Geraint Thomas. Ben O'Connor dropped a little bit down. He is a whooping 9:47 after Pogacar. The relevant thing here is that he's around 2 minutes after Dani Martinez. And then Antonio Tiberi in fifth, 10 minutes 29. So it kind of looks like Tiberi is moving upwards, not in the GC, but second-wise, and O'Connor is moving somewhat downwards, but we shall see in the coming days. Only one movement on the GC situation, and then Filippo Sanna down one spot, and Ainar Rubio up one spot to eighth. And Jan Hirt rounds out the top 10.
Brian, the one fringe competition in which there was significant moves were made, positions weren't necessarily changed that much, but moves were made.
Mountain competition, yeah.
Yeah, Pelizzari and Georg Steinhauser made significant progress, didn't they? I dare say it's not enough progress to bring them into contention to win that competition. However, Brian, what happened?
Because Giulio Pelizzari won the Cima Coppi, which is just like a bonus, an added bonus of points. He is now up to second, but he's still almost 100 points behind Pogacar. So it's 230, 148, and Georg Steinhauser is 130.
Brian.
Yes, Pelizzari up 4 spots in the climbers competition.
Brian, at this point in the podcast, traditionally you ask me a question.
Yeah, I was with you at the finish line today, but once we got there, I didn't see you anymore because you were busy talking to people. And who were they and what did they say?
Brian, let's hear first, shall we, from the stage winner, Georg Steinhauser. We will then hear from his direct sportif, Matti Breschel. Yeah, that's a kind of German pronunciation. It's probably wrong.
That's pretty okay. good.
And then third position, we will hear from, well, he's indeed in third position in the general classification. We'll hear from Geraint Thomas, shall we?
It's a dream coming true to have my first pro win and then in the Grand Tour. And then on a stage like today, it's amazing. I knew that I have good legs. I didn't really know how my body will respond to all the load, like to the last week of the Giro, because I never did a Grand Tour before. But this morning when I rolled into the sign-in, I knew, okay, I have the legs to win today. Matti Breschel was in the car, and it's great to have him behind you. You know, he done all this the same stuff than we riders do now. And we can feel this, you know. To have him behind in the car, for sure, some insurance. Feels like insurance. And he told me to keep on pushing until the line, because with GC guys, and especially with Pogacar, you never know. He's so amazingly strong. On the last 2 kilometers, I thought, okay, I'm going to make it.
Good legs and a bit of luck. He learned a lot the last few weeks. Basically, every day, every second day, we go over his mistakes, and he takes that in really, really well. He uses it in a constructive way, so not just getting pissed at me. And I think that he did the whole race with super legs and made no real mistakes. Obviously, a little bit of luck. I mean, he searched for it, and he had this desire to win, especially after the big day in Livigno. Yeah, it was insane racing. Nearly 4,000 meters of elevation, and Cima Coppi in the beginning, and think Georg was in everything. He even got caught when DSM rode. He went again, and luckily for us, the whole game around the GC, obviously Ineos looking after Geraint Thomas, and UAE was not taking any risk also. That was in our favor.
You seem quite emotional. Was it an emotional afternoon in the car?
It was, yeah. We've been so close, and I build up a lot of emotions, because I really, really wanted to win a stage. I know that the guys had it in them, and they really had the desire to win. And it was a high, intense day. So yeah, I was super nervous on the descent and just trying to keep it cool. And then all of a sudden, when I realized that Gear was about to win,
practically as well, on a day like today, I mean, we didn't have reception all day, couldn't see all the pictures, but things like collecting jackets, collecting food, when he didn't have a second to lose, how complicated was that in the last 50 kilometers?
It's complicated, and as a DS you need to be sharp, and we managed today really well. There was maybe only one moment where I couldn't pass the peloton, but other than that, I think we did good, me and CJ in the cars. With this weather, it's all about trying to give everything the riders need. Also figure out yourself what they might need, because you can't really communicate in these weather circumstances.
Yeah, we tried to set a good pace at the bottom and try and set it up to try and attack, but didn't quite have the legs to really go. Just seemed to be on a par with Danny really and a few of the other boys. Yeah, it was good day from the team, and everyone rode really well.
What do you think when Martinez went, Pog followed?
Yeah, I was kind of happy for it, you know, and to try and maybe go over the top, but yeah, I didn't really have the legs to do that, so would have liked to have tried to gone with Pog, but I was already starting to feel the legs, so it was like, story of the race, really, let him go ahead and race behind.
But with Ben Swift, Narvaez, a Rensman, a hell of a ride by Ineos.
How we've been riding the whole race, really. It's just a shame that Pogge's as good as he is. But yeah.
Talk about the moment where the group sort of didn't decide to let Steinhauser go away, but then there was a bit of a sort of deadlock for a minute, and that's when the gap started going up.
I could tell UAE weren't too bothered about the stage for once. They let a nice break go, but then DSM rode a real solid tempo at the top of one of the climbs, and then down went super fast, and a bunch was splitting, chaos behind. But they brought that group back then of like whatever it was, eight or so, and then it was kind of start again, and so it was just kind of like let some riders go, really.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind us to tell you that this episode of our Giro coverage is sponsored by NordVPN. Now, if you've been listening to the Cycling Podcast for any length of time, you'll already know that a VPN is a virtual private network which can keep your data safe and secure when you're online, whether you're at home or on the road. And you'll also know that I've been a NordVPN customer since well before they started advertising in the podcast. And that was because when I was away covering the races, I was logging onto the internet in the press room or in the hotel or picking up a hotspot here or there to get online and do some work. And I was a bit concerned about the security of those connections and just wanted to make sure that my data was going to be secure. So I looked into NordVPN and signed up, and I've been a customer ever since. In fact, I remember one Giro rest day, I was in a laundrette and the laundrette had its own Wi-Fi hotspot, and I switched on my NordVPN, logged onto the internet and did a bit of work while my washing went round and round in the machine. I mean, that's an insight into life on the Grand Tours, isn't it? Much more glamorous when Daniel and Brian talk about it. Anyway, there are lots of other benefits to NordVPN. Check it out at nordvpn.com/TCP. That's TCP for the Cycling Podcast. You can read all about the various different benefits, because it's not just about online security. You can also carry on watching your favorite streaming services if you're on holiday. Perhaps they are geo restricted, but you want to carry on watching your box set series in the evenings, perhaps while you're away. And NordVPN can help you log on to the internet as if you were at home. So there's a lot more to NordVPN than just security. Check it out at nordvpn.com/TCP. And if you use that link, you'll also get the offer of a great discount. Now it's back to Daniel and Brian in Italy.
Well, Brian, as you said, first victory in the professional career, in the sort of flourishing, I would say, already flourishing professional career of Georg Steinhauser, who we heard from earlier in the Giro d'Italia. He was the subject, the victim. Where were we? We were in Abruzzo of our Chiacchierata del Giorno. He told us then about how his sort of metalworking study had only just concluded a couple of years ago. He'd spent a long time getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and leading a sort of double life as a professional cyclist and a student. That was all now over. I think we mentioned as well, Brian, we have mentioned in this Giro d'Italia, this was a guy who was handed the sort of poison chalice of an extravagant billing by his team manager, Jonathan Vauters, who called him the most talented under 23 rider in the world when EF Education First Easy Post signed him. However, Brian, by all accounts, he's a diligent young man. He's a very talented young man. You mentioned his father, Tobias Steinhauser. I mentioned when we did feature him in Chiacchierata del Giorno, his uncle through marriage is or was, because he's now divorced, but Jan Ulrich.
And
of
he's
course, won in the 1997
coached
Tour de
by his father's old training pal, Michele Bartoli.
Yeah. So there's a rich pedigree there. And what we just heard from Matti Breschel, I've spoken to Matty a couple of times during this Giro about Georg Steinhauser, and he talks about that heritage, the fact that he has grown up in a cycling family, and you can kind of see that in the way he races. And
Filo d'arte is called Filo,
in Italian. He also races with a lot of kind of nous and a lot of race sense, and we saw that today.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
I actually thought about it when he was administrating the gap, and I think economizing that gap on the Brocon, which especially on the last ascent was very uneven. The gradients were all over the map. It was a little bit up and then it was down. It was flat, falls flat, and then some steep ramp. So for sure, anyone, even if you'd done recon, you'd struggle to remember. One thing was his how he economized, but also what went on behind him, which he obviously had nothing to do with. But he timed it perfectly and he still had something left, and it was a significant gap. And a lesser rider or a rider on a sugar low or something would have cracked and would not have made it to the finish.
One thing we also said during the Giro d'Italia earlier on was that Steinhaus, I think we sort of suggested that he might well be in contention for a stage. And this often happens with these, particularly these, like, what the French call baroudeurs, or the breakaway guys. You kind of get a sense early in the race for who are those guys who might take a break to the finish. And there've been one or two in this race, but, you know, we've seen it before. Guys like, I remember Michael Storer when he won two stages of the Vuelta, Ben King when he won two stages of the Vuelta. You just sort of see them early on in Grand Tours where it is very difficult to take a breakaway to the finish. And, you know, I said to you yesterday and today, I think that Pogacar's dominance here, I think, has created a situation whereby the other teams have become kind of desperate, and we saw that with Movistar yesterday, and they're trying things where there isn't really the terrain or the latitude to try things. They're sort of setting the pace, bringing breaks back, and that often means that the group is coming to the bottom of final climbs within touching distance of breakaways. And I did feel that Pogacar could have struck out if he'd really been inclined to, or if he'd needed to, at the bottom of the Brocco on the last time up, and probably caught Steinhauser. However,
but then the last thing you said, you mentioned DSM without mentioning them.
Well, we're going to get to them in a minute. But I also, you know, I remembered the Motolina, that was only 3 days ago, but Steinhauser there, Pogacar gave him a nice sort of name check, and he's kind of dishing out these presents or this kind of flattery like confetti at the moment. You know, he gave Pellizzari the jersey yesterday, he gave Steinhauser, you know, he said nice things about Steinhauser the other day, and this is kind of his way of sort of redistributing the wealth in this Giro d'Italia, or at least compensating for the fact that he can't.
It's a feudal distribution of wealth, isn't it?
It is. I mean, what's going to happen tomorrow? What's he going to, you know, is he going
to
sort of...
Well, I'm not sure it's his to give away tomorrow, but we'll get to that.
But yeah, you mentioned DSM, and they were the team today who at one stage looked as though they were going to do UAE's bidding for them, because, again, that's a team that's... It's really trying hard to get something out of this final week, and particularly with Romain Bardet. Let's hear now. They took a lot of flack for doing as much work as they did today on social media, and I should also say that their director sportifs were aware that they'd got a lot of...
This is quite interesting. So if you work too much, you get flack.
Yeah.
If you work too little...
The only way not to get any flack is to win, basically.
Right, or not show up.
Yeah, that's the cycling podcast pro tip to all direct sportives: make sure you win every stage in future. Here is the explanation, or the explanation that their direct sportive Matt Winston gave to us after the finish about why they rode the way they did today. Well, we all know you're a team that commits, and when you have a plan, you follow through with it. It sounds as though that's what it was today, rather than reacting to circumstances.
Yesterday, day after the rest day, when the stage changed for us, the parkour yesterday couldn't have been worse for Roman. Fast downhill for 100k, and then one, it was split into two, but one main climb towards the finish. You saw Roman drop there like 15k's to go yesterday. The guys did a great job to pace him back. So we know when Roman's to perform, it has to be a hard day. When we just cruise along, so we tried to go in the break at the start. It was only like 7-8 guys up the road, it's not enough. So Roman came back, he sat up and waited for the peloton. And then we said, right, okay, we just commit to our plan. And the guys believed in it. They were really keen for it. So we said, okay, we'll put some pressure on. We'll see what happens. After the long descent, the race had split. So we just kept the pressure into the next third category climb. Kevin and Roman tried to attack together to then bridge across that last 30 seconds to the break. But Pogacar marked him straight away. He was straight on it. And yeah, then it's pointless to continue there. We're just going to burn ourselves. So we just used Heist just to keep the pressure on in the peloton. And then, yeah, see how we go at the finish.
What do you think he was doing? I mean, it's really a question for him, what Pogacar was doing, why he was marking Roman, but what do you think?
I think he just loves racing, and he saw a nice double attack there, and I'll go with that one and see what happens. But like I say, we focus on our own race, and we make our plans, and we try and focus on our plan. We wanted to do something today. I think we've maybe cemented towards a top 10 place today, which was also a goal for us, or top 8. Yeah, so we focused on that on the run into the finish.
Yesterday, as it turned out to be, simply didn't suit Romain Bardet. They originally intended to try something yesterday. They couldn't, so they switched their focus to today. And the real, the spanner in the works, the glitch in the matrix was, again, Tadej Pogacar. But this was a kind of a surprising intervention from Pogacar when he did chase Bardet down. Matt Winston suggested there that, well, he simply...
Do you know why I think he did it?
Go on.
He's bored.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? He likes to race. He just, he wanted to get involved. And I felt that about his final attack, ultimately. Yeah. However, one thing did cross my mind, and it feels sort of almost hypocritical to say this because I dismissed it out of hand the other day. However, we did hear when... about a week ago, the narrative was all about Pogacar not handing out enough confetti and gifts and blandishments. We did hear this rumour.
Also, handing out confetti then, it was pretty poor.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what are you really going to do with it?
Yeah. We did hear this rumour from a very good source in the peloton, I must add, that there had been words exchanged between Romain Bardet and Machin, the UAE Directeur Sportif, about the fact that UAE were dominating.
Can I just say something? Because you and I spoke about that in the car coming down the Brocon. And this is a disclaimer from real life. People talk in the peloton, right? There's talk between riders and cars, other team cars, other sports directors. It's perfectly normal. And sometimes there's nothing sensational in someone. It can be joking. It can be also sometimes, hard words can be exchanged. It is fairly normal. And there's also... you sometimes try and convince people that you have common interests, which competitors sometimes do in professional cycling. I just want to say, in a very long way apparently, it is quite normal that riders talk to other team sports directors, not just to get a new contract, but
still, well, it's a tantalizing, these are always sort of tantalizing kind of ideas, conspiracy theories, really, that the reason that Pogacar went after Bardet was some kind of revenge attack, some kind of retribution for something that Bardet said a few days ago. Again, totally unsubstantiated. We certainly can't substantiate it, but if
we have polemica withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to go with that polemica as your polemica of the day, then be our guest, Brian. Pogacar and the way he rode today, again, I felt as though he was almost, he did have a hand on the handbrake.
Yes and no. When you try and make a big attack with 2 kilometers to go and the rider in front of you has 2 minutes. I mean, sure, it could have gone faster. I think he should have gone left earlier for that to really make sense. And then what if, and that's coming back to the velvet polemica of before, had he then caught him, it would either way had been very close to the finish. So he could have done himself a disfavor if he had then caught this young rider just about to win his first pro win with, 800 meters to go. It puts him in an awkward position. I think he went too late for the stage win. Two kilometers for 2 minutes, not likely, even for him.
Not too much more we can say about Pogacar, is there? What there isn't in this Giro, I mean, he's got the lead that he's got, but, we've seen riders very dominant in stage races before, but there is still distant, somewhere looming threat that the situation can change. And I think more than the time, Pogacar's demeanour and the way he looks on the bike in particular suggests to me that it is almost an impossibility that he will capitulate or that he will even have a bad day. He doesn't look remotely close to having a bad day. I mean, there are only two stages now where it could happen. There's the Sapada stage on Friday and there's the Monte Grappa, the double ascent of Monte Grappa on Saturday. But again, this is sort of armchair analysis, armchair quarterbacking. However, I do feel as though he has ridden within himself. Whether there are conversations, and the UAE have certainly not told us this, and Machin Giannetti, they've certainly not said that he's trying to economise. But
He said it to me at the press conference yesterday that he was trying to economise.
Oh, he was.
And he was certainly also trying to economise his team. Yes. And in that sense, that actually worked out for them today.
Brian, I've just remembered something that we didn't mention, we should have mentioned in the Processo alla Tappa. Didn't they lose someone today? They did not lose someone.
No, it was just the very, very last.
Yeah.
Second last.
We heard at one point...
But it was last because David Dekker didn't finish.
We heard at one point in the day that Mikel Biel was having difficulty out on the road. I must say, I saw him this morning in the mix zone and he looked very chipper. He looked on good form. There was no sense there that he was... he was anxious about the day. A lot of the riders, I think, as I said earlier, did seem quite anxious about the day ahead, but
yeah,
I mean,
especially with that type of start. But he was dead last today. Mikel Biel, 145th, 46 minutes and 13 behind. I'm not sure that's just saving yourself. That could actually mean he had some kind of issue.
given that the engraver can already start, can, I don't know, get out his engraving tools and start sharpening them ready for Sunday.
The Eternal Trophy.
Yeah, ready for the Trofeo Senza Fine in Rome on Sunday. This battle for the podium places, as you said, Ben O'Connor conceded some ground today and that's kind of been the trend for Ben O'Connor for a few days now. He's sort of been slipping down the pole a little bit. Would you be fairly confident that Martinez Thomas is the way it's going to finish, maybe in that order or vice versa?
I couldn't tell the order at this point. I mean, it's less than 20 seconds that separates them in the GC. But if you look at the trajectory, at least, it does look as if Tiberi is on the up and O'Connor is a little bit going the other way, but a lot can change. And with this type of sort of elevator in the GC, I wouldn't rule him out, but he'll need to finish stronger than he's looked the last couple of days.
Indeed, Brian. We're going to change gear at this point and get to the Chiacchierata del Giorno. But before we do, there was one other rider I wanted to mention today. He didn't have his most sort of eye-catching day of the Giro d'Italia, but he's having a very good Giro in general. And he's riding his last Giro d'Italia, and that is Simon Geschke of Cofidis. 38-year-old, I got it wrong in my interview with him this morning. I thought he was 37, but he's actually 38-year-old German from Berlin, in fact. And Brian, it struck me as curious that he's been trying very hard to get himself into the blue jersey of the King of the Mountains competition leader. However, while being a long way adrift in that competition and not really, I didn't think, harbouring any serious hopes of winning the competition because Tadej Pogacar is so far ahead. But it struck me that this was kind of ironic given that in the Tour de France a couple of years ago, if you remember, he lost the polka dot jersey on the penultimate day.
True.
But was due to wear it on the last day and didn't want to wear it.
And
he was very upset. I remember on the top of the, I can't remember the mountain, it was in the Pyrenees, the last mountain stage of the 2022 Tour de France, and he was sort of in tears, and this was going to be one of the biggest, it was one of the biggest goals, and it would have been one of the biggest achievements of his career to take that polka dot jersey to Paris, and it didn't happen. And it's been good to see him in what is going to be his final Giro d'Italia.
He's 14th overall.
Yeah, he's riding really, really well. And he has looked as though he's been enjoying this last hurrah. So I thought we should get a word with him this morning, Simon Geschke. In a stage I thought, to be honest, he might well pick up quite a lot more points because I thought he would be in the break today. And he tried, but didn't make it. But here's Simon Geschke.
It's been a great Giro for you. Your last season as a pro, you said at the start of the year this was going to be a special season. You must be really happy that that's what it's proving to be, at least so far.
Never easy to always have a good year, but this year is going well so far. Especially the Giro was my first highlight of the season. The Giro has been amazing. Also, we as a team, I mean, we won a stage and Stanislav, our sprinter, was second the other day behind Milan, and I'm doing well. So we are quite happy for our standards. It's a very good Giro for me personally also.
It's kind of ironic. You spent a lot of time in the blue jersey, and I think you've wanted to wear the blue jersey, and yet I remember at the Tour de France you didn't want the polka dot jersey because it wasn't yours. Just explain that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice to wear a jersey in the Grand Tour. It's never easy, but I think the winner has already decided, more or less. I think in theory it's all still possible, but I think it's going to be really hard in the GC, but also for the blue jersey to get anywhere near Pogacar.
You're 37. Have you thought during this Giro that maybe you could have done another year or two?
I'm 38.
Are you 38?
No, this will definitely be my last season. I'm very happy with my career. Of course, you always want to do better everywhere, every time. But with what I did, I'm looking back on I'm very satisfied. And no, I'm, of course, on this level. If I would always be on this level like here, I could. It would be fun to continue for one or two more years. But I also know that it's not that much fun when you're not as good. So I know this is my last season. I have it in my head. Everything is the last race now, and I'm also looking forward to the time after.
I was going to say, just last thing, where will you be? What will you be doing next May, for example?
Oh, hard to say. I probably at home. My biggest goal is to be more at home. I mean, it's been a long career and I was traveling a lot. I want to stay in cycling, but I don't have any specific plans.
Lots of interviews tonight. Next up, not a cyclist, but a photographer, another photographer. We interviewed one the other day, Tadej Pogačar's personal photographer. Today, we're going to interview a photographer who does a lot of races, does all the races, pretty much all the important races. He's also a former rider, Leon Van Bon.
Former world champion.
Under 23, was he? Was he? And former Tour de France stage winner. I mean, he's... reinvention as a photographer that would be worthy of a podcast in itself. However, he caught a lot of people's attention, or some of his work caught a lot of people's attention earlier in the week because when Tadej Pogačar was riding towards the finish line at Motolino on Sunday, Leon Van Bon was poised with his camera, as he often is, close to the finish line. The difference on this day was that he took a picture which featured not only Tadej Pogačar, but two stunt skiers flying over, almost sort of grazing, almost sort of clipping off, you know, the little tuft of hair that you usually see sticking up through Tadej Pogačar's helmet, almost sort of clipping that off.
I feel like it was like a Red Bull were like shooting a YouTube video or something.
It's a remarkable picture, and if you haven't seen it, look up Leon's Instagram page. It's Leon Van Bon with underscores between the Leon and the Van, and then the Van and the Bon. Leon Van Bon is the subject of today's, the victim of today's
La chiacchierata del giorno, the chin wag of the day.
Leon Van Bon, Tour de France stage winner turned photographer, and well, for the last few days you've been a photographer that people have been talking about a lot because you took this picture on the Motolino, Tadej Pogačar coming past in the pink jersey. And what were they, Leon? Were they stunt skiers flying overhead? Now, the making of this picture, please tell us about it.
Well, actually, I heard about it and then I thought, yeah, that's a unique shot. So even if it was not working out, I was willing to take the chance and to take the shot that probably happens only one time I'm gonna be around when skiers flying over, so. Yeah, and then I ended up there and I start talking with the coordinator of the skiers and try to plan everything right. And I was saying, yeah, Pogačar is going around 20 k's an hour here. So I was measuring 30 meters because the skiers did 6 seconds and all those things we were involved in. And then at the last moment, almost went wrong because some guy went walking up the hill on the slope where the skiers were coming down. And then you notice that the whole crowd were standing there, wanted to see it as well, and they were shouting at the guy walking, saying, go away, go away. And then finally he understood and he walked away, and then it worked out perfectly.
Were the guys jumping all day, or were these two guys waiting there for the whole afternoon just for this moment?
Well, they did some practicing jumps and also to get the timing right. And there were only two, a brother and a sister. I was in contact later with them for the photo and the stuff like that. And it was really nice, friendly environment to be there. And yeah, something I will never forget, I think.
You sort of already explained. Just tell me, where did you first get the idea?
Well, we were walking up and normally we try to not to be in between the fences, yeah. So we stop around 1200 meters, and there was a friend of my girlfriend, and she said, yeah, you know, there are ski jumpers there, they're gonna jump over the first rider. So, and at that moment Quintana was the first rider, and it would have been nice as well, but of course you wanted to have it with today. And when he took over Quintana, I was like getting nervous, and yeah, it was a really exciting feeling.
And I said you've got a lot of attention. That's my impression. Tell me, have you got a lot of attention for it?
Well, it was one of my best pictures on my Instagram and most viewed reel I ever made. So in that way, yes. And also a lot of recognition of colleagues and people saying, wow, nice photos. And also clients who are not here in the Giro sending me messages, yeah, awesome photos. So, yeah, way more than normally.
If I was one of your colleagues, I think I would have taken a similar picture, but just photoshopped the guys. There's a lot that can go wrong there, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you've
I mean, I'm sure every picture you take is perfectly focused in that, but imagine getting that wrong.
Yeah, well, that was the gamble that I wanted to take, and it was perfectly, and you also don't know exactly how high they're going to fly and stuff like that, and yeah, the timing has to be right, and there was so much that could have gone wrong, and it didn't, so yeah, that makes it extra special.
Okay. Very last thing, I'm aware that there'll be some sort of photography geeks listening. Technically, is there anything, you know, the sort of lens you used, anything about the sort of technical aspects of that photo?
I shot f8, 24 millimeters to be wide enough. It's a bit cropped, of course, because I had to take my chances, and I didn't know how high they're really going to fly. I tried in the practice jumps, but it's not always the same. And yeah, that's about it.
Great stuff. And I guess Pogacar is aware of it. He's seen it. Do you know?
He liked it. I tried to make him collaborate with it, but he did it. So.
What would that mean? You mean tag?
No, you can collab post on Instagram, but that's fine.
He has his own personal photographer. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you don't want to push him away.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Well, Brian, that was Leon Van Bon.
I'm putting up my hand, corrections corner.
Brian's taking a quick left, a swift left turn to corrections corner.
Yeah, he took a bronze medal. I actually thought he was under 23 world champ, but he took a bronze medal in the elite race when the world's win San Sebastian 1997, won by Laurent Bouchard, Bo Hamburger second, and Leon Van Bon, now photographer, third.
Maybe he'll get a gold medal for that photograph, that wonderful photograph in a photography competition at some point in the year. He certainly deserves it. Today, the start was gloriously sort of free of polemica about today's route, at least. However, the polemica of yesterday about this start that was supposed to be in Livigno but was moved, well, it kind of dragged on, Brian, as we suspected it would. We heard last night from the sort of organizing committee in Livigno. They were pretty diplomatic about it, pretty sanguine, but we talked about the cost to Livigno yesterday, and this issue of the ceremonial start that the riders didn't show up for. This morning, at the start, in the mix zone, we were graced by the presence of the race director, Mauro Vegni.
Se la situazione peggiorava, che fossimo partiti da Prati allo Stelvio, per cui non c'era.
Brian, we heard a bit of Mauro Vegni there, a few seconds, you've heard the whole thing. Not happy man. And again, the bugbear was this, well, a couple of bugbears. One was that this meeting, this final meeting before the riders sort of left Livigno yesterday, Mauro Vegni went out thinking that they had an agreement. He referred to this handshake.
White smoke came out of the chimney, yeah, at the Vatican.
Yeah, that they had shaken hands, they'd agreed that the riders were going to show up for this ceremonial start around Livigno. No one showed up. There were crickets, tumbleweed, and the mayor, I think a lot of people saw him on TV, I didn't see him, but he was very upset. So Mauro Vegni didn't understand this. He still didn't seem to understand why it had happened this morning. Contrary to what the organising committee
Martin Livigno told us yesterday that relations were still good with RCS and they weren't too bothered. Maravegna said, no, they're upset. They're very upset, and he could understand them. And he also said something pretty provocative about the riders in general. And he referred to the COVID year, and he talked about the efforts that the Giro d'Italia and RCS had gone to organise races in the COVID year and to ensure that a lot of these guys still had a job. And he sort of said, well, they soon forgot that, didn't they? When they needed us, that was one thing. When we need them, you know, they didn't show up for us. Just generally as well on the weather and this issue of having a plan B or a plan B. Well, he said everything had been sort of decided even the day before, even on the rest day. He said that was all clear and they were all on board with it. And the other thing he said was that he wants and the Giro needs a date change, and he says that he wants the Giro to finish in the middle of June and then they wouldn't have any problems in as regards bad weather, as regards snow. But that's something that they've been sort of campaigning and lobbying for a long time, and so far it hasn't happened. And we talked yesterday about a possible date change next year. But Brian, that's one side of the sort of the divide, the great divide. The other side, on the other side, are the riders, and particularly their representative, the president of the CPA, Adam Hansen. He was at the start this morning as well, and I spoke to him.
Just clear up one thing. This issue of the riders not showing up yesterday at the start, and you know, Maravegna just said that there was the handshake. You all left the room on the same page that he thought, and that was that the riders were going to come to the start, and they didn't. So what exactly happened in that, I think it was about 20 minutes?
Yeah, so this handshake is agreeing to disagree. So the extreme weather protocol is, depending who's at the race, but it's two UCI, two or three organisers, one teams, one riders. And we all make an agreement, and we did not obviously get our way. So I can accept that's what the commission panel has accepted. I can agree on that, but I just say that's not what the riders want. And they seem to think that because that's what the panel agreed, that's what the riders have to accept. And it wasn't a threat. It was really like, please, guys, we want to avoid a protest. We want to avoid this bad image of cycling. We want that pass to be eliminated. We'll do anything. We want that pass to be eliminated. If you were to do this one thing, yeah, you get everything that you want. But they were so stubborn on having this pass, which was closed by Swiss authorities in the end, and you couldn't do it because it's full of snow. Whatever we agreed was never approved by the riders. So you can say this to the media, but that's not the truth.
Right. So, yeah, this ceremonial start in Livigno, that was never, well, it was never something that you'd given your approval for.
I was clearing all the different proposals they had, because all the proposals had the descent of Ombrao Pass. And I said, if you keep having that, it's not going to happen. And I encourage them, have the race. If you have the race with the pass, no problem. If you sanction all the riders, no problem. I stand by the riders and they're aware of the consequences. That's fine. And I'll accept that. I accept that's the decision of the panel. But I don't think the riders will be there. And they were threatening that they'll do it even with one team, and one team can have pink all the way to the Rome. I said, that's fine. You can do that. And the riders will take the consequences. That's fine. It was their choice in the end.
Can you untangle that for us, or just, yeah?
I mean, maybe they need to go to the notary when they make arrangements and shake hands, or there needs to be some kind of witness, because this is a factual disagreement that's still ongoing about what was agreed upon, and that I find puzzling, because we set up these, or cycling has set up these measures to figure out in a common forum how disagreements can be ironed out for the sake of everyone. And that those efforts were made, but the outcome of it was certainly not agreed upon. So that I find quite troubling, because when you have these, I mean, it is not an easy situation. There's no perfect solution, all kinds of moving parts. We spoke about that at length yesterday, but I sort of feel that something that doesn't really make sense, that the two most important parts of this equation walk away from a meeting, a physical meeting where words were spoken, with a distinct different opinion about what was said and what was agreed upon.
Yeah, I'm still slightly confused. And I'm kind of kicking myself for not asking Adam Hansen the third time. So this issue of the ceremonial start, because as far as I can understand, Maravegna was willing, RCS had agreed to take out the descent of the Umbra. And they talked about the new start, where it actually took place. But they wanted this the ceremonial start. And Adam Hansen said, no, that wasn't the case. They were insisting all of the options on the table from RCS featured the descent of the Umbral Pass. So there is still a contradiction, and I'm still not quite fully clear on that. Maybe tomorrow, maybe we'll drag this out for a third day. Probably not. We'll probably park it there. Hopefully we will. One thing that was interesting that Adam Hansen said was that he was willing, well, I mean, he should probably, I'm not sure the riders would agree with him, but if the riders had all been sanctioned, I don't know, kicked out of the race, I haven't read the rule, but what's the worst that could have happened if they'd refused to ride? He was kind of okay with that, and he was willing to sort of bear that consequence. Even if, you know, he talked, I think, in the interview about even if there was only one team left standing, and that, you know, it could have been a Bardiani rider winning the Giro d'Italia. It could be eight Bardiani riders. I don't know if they've still got eight riders left, but they could be the only riders left in the race today.
He's the head of a, I don't know, for, let's call it a trade union or an interest organization that works, lobbies, has the interest of the riders' safety and everything else that goes on in their career. For someone to have the tool to say, if we don't agree, we will not start, you have to uphold, call it an illusion or the physical possibility that they will strike, or else it doesn't make sense. It ruins the language game of saying something and then not doing it. So he kind of has to say that into the absurd, I would say, because ultimately, and this is actually, now I'm just going to like go back to that again. Of course, they could have just ridden the parade thing, gotten in the cars, started where they started eventually. Maybe that would have solved a lot more problems than we are currently like trying to figure out. But yeah, he has to keep that word. Well, we'll just not ride then. But we all know, even if this is not the Tour de France, of course they will eventually ride. I mean, I couldn't, like, Pogacar would not accept this Giro win to vaporize because of something like that. I don't believe that for a second.
Brian, Adam Hansen is the rider's man in the corridors of power. Our man in the peloton is Larry Warbass. And, well, he had an interesting day yesterday.
Larenzando. A postcard from Italy with Larry Warbass.
Larry, I had unconfirmed reports yesterday, and I can't believe them because you're always looking, you know, you're always looking resplendent and radiant. But I heard that you weren't looking your best after the finish.
No.
And I saw some photographic evidence as well.
Yeah, I felt terrible yesterday. You know, it was a bit of a mess with all that start and everything. In sort of like the mess of everything, our bags left sort of before the start. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to take my inhaler. From the start, I just like wheezing like crazy with the weather and everything. So yeah, we hit the bottom the last climb and I couldn't breathe. And then, yeah, I felt terrible. So it was a rough day for me, but it was fine. I got to the finish, so.
Pleased to report, you're looking, you know, you're back to your usual self this
good,
morning.
Good. Yeah.
Back to the sort of Jake Gyllenhaal doppelganger we all know and love. The last half hour before the start, yesterday, what were you hearing? What did you think was going to happen? I'm sorry, I'm talking about the original start, because there's this issue about you guys not having shown up to this for this ceremonial lap of Livigno.
I mean, I'm in the CPA group or whatever, so I was quite sure we definitely weren't going to get on our bikes, and yeah, everyone kind of stuck together because, like, to do 15K in the snow is not a good thing, and then, you know, be soaking, freezing. And then get in the cars. We didn't have our buses or anything. It just wouldn't have been a good scenario. So everyone pretty much stuck together. And so, yeah, it was in this CPA group. So I saw exactly, you know, sort of what was happening. In the end, we didn't really know totally what was going to happen. After that, I knew we weren't going to do this lap, at least, or start from Livigno.
La tappa di domani e la cena di ieri. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's dinner.
Brian, yesterday's dinner will be a bit like the origins of Lionel's nickname. It's something that will probably never be explained or touched upon again in the cycling podcast. Should we talk about tomorrow's stage briefly?
Very briefly. It's a very flat stage, a few bumps along the way. This could be the wine stage, if any of them, because we're passing through a lot of Prosecco vineyards, including the town of Valdobbiadene. It actually finishes down your neck of the woods, I would say, Padova. I mean, there's a Category 4 climb. I think we road drove past it coming here in Le Mans.
Famous for beans.
And then there's a claim to fame in yeah. something, right? And then there's the, you know, that's kind of it. There's an uncategorized climb in where the intermediate sprint, where the sprint is. Other than that, it should be fairly straightforward.
Finish in the very, very beautiful Prato alla Valle, which is claims to be, I think it's one of the biggest squares, town squares in Europe. I think at various times in the past it has claimed to be the biggest. I don't think that's the case.
I actually haven't looked at the run-in. I wouldn't exclude that they wouldn't make it dangerous regardless.
No. And we had a funny story in the podcast. Maybe we'll play it again tomorrow. We had a funny story from a 90s or 2000 sprinter, Ivan Quaranta, a few years ago about a stage finish in Padova, in Prato alla Valle, where Mario Cipollini chased him onto the bus due to some slight that Ivan Quaranta had committed. But it was quite a funny story.
But maybe he did
we'll play
win.
That again tomorrow. Yeah, he did win, I think. Yeah. Right.
Well,
yeah.
Hence the agonizing chase.
Brian, that's it for tonight. Grazie, buonasera.
Grazie, buonasera.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.